We have a very special speaker who is going to explore the reasons why relationships can break down, but more importantly, look towards the solutions towards building more positive and harmonious relationships with ourselves and one another. Sister Genty is the European and Middle East Director of the Brahma Kumaris and NGO representative to the United Nations in Geneva. On behalf of you all, I would like to invite Sister Genty onto stage.
Om Shanti. A greeting of peace to my sisters and my brothers, and a very warm welcome to Baroness Verma and her team. We all have relationships and we know how much attention they need. If you have a weed growing in a garden, you don't have to give it any attention. If you want a flower in your garden, it needs to be tended. And so relationships are very precious. And whichever quality of relationship it may be, whether it's parent and child or partners or spouses or friends, but every single relationship is a precious flower that needs to be tended. And so you plant the seed, you water it, you make sure it gets the right amount of sun and light and warmth, but also you just give it good vibrations. Good vibrations work with plants. Have you seen that? Well, vibrations impact relationships hugely. And so the good vibrations we can give each and every one of our relationships makes a big difference. I won't spend too much time talking about why things break down. You've had that experience, you know what all that's about and the grief and sorrow that it brings, so I won't spend too much time on that. But what do I need to do to make sure that relationships develop in the right way and can be sustained over a period of time? Sometimes I hear a comment from some people, this person thinks that relationships are disposable like paper tissues. And it's not a nice thing to hear, but you can see why people make this comment. You use somebody, and for the time that you're using them, great, and then you forget about them. And they go somewhere in the recess, in the back store of your mind, and you don't think about them anymore. But a relationship is precious, valuable, and so I need to be able to nurture it and value it constantly, consistently, and every human being is important. And it may sound strange, but one of the sentences that Natalie spoke during the meditation caught my attention, and I just want to spend a little time on that. Spoke about how the most important relationship that we have is the one with the self. Sounds totally odd, doesn't it? And it sounds very self-centered and very selfish in a way. But no, not true. Because whatever I do to myself is what I'm going to do to others around me. And if I don't know how to treat myself very well, I won't know how to treat other people either. So how do I treat myself? Do I make time for myself? Do I make time to listen to my inner voice? Do I make time to get to know myself? Do I value myself? Do I respect myself? All of these are questions that you can go through in your own time, just checking where you are on that list. And the reality is that if I've done all of those things in a positive way, then I'm going to make time for you. I'm going to be able to listen to you. I'm going to be able to value you and respect you also. And so how do I do all of these things? It doesn't take a huge amount of time. It takes a few minutes every day, and preferably in the morning at the start of the day. And if at the start of the day I can have time for myself, and also at the end of the day, if I can do an audit for myself at the end of the day, that will also keep me moving in the right direction. And the reason why we don't value and respect each other, and so often people say, but you know, he's my child, he's my son, and so of course I love him, and of course I respect him. Well, do I show that respect in the way that I treat him? Do I show how much I value him and love him? And so I can't say it's there hidden away inside and I don't have to express it outside. I do have to express it outside. But it starts with myself. It's a reality that if I know how to value myself, I'm also going to respect myself for that. And if I don't know my own value and I feel insecure, then there's going to be a fluctuation, and the fluctuation isn't a very pleasant one. It goes from ego, insecurity is manifest as ego and bossiness and control issues. It sounds as if it's powerful and strong, but no, it's not. It stems from insecurity. I need to control things out there because I'm insecure inside. And so when I value myself and I have that security of who I am, then there's no ego. But also, insecurity, and I swing between ego but also inferiority. And so the ups and downs we experience are because I'm not really connected with myself. And if I'm going through ups and downs myself, what is the basis for a stable relationship with anyone else? It's not on very firm ground, is it? But where I've got to know myself, the ups and the downs, the light and the dark, both, but I know. And so in that knowing, but also something else in the knowing, that although there may be dark patches here and there, the original state of being of the human spirit is of goodness, is of truth, of beauty, of joy. And when I know that, then yes, I know through my journey I'll also deal with all the dark patches that may come, but I'll stay connected with that original truth and goodness that I carry. And that applies to everyone, not one or two or few, but every human being. But we need to connect with that goodness within. And in that stable consciousness of who I am, there's a humility that emerges. There was a video that someone sent me a couple of days ago, and some of you may have seen it, I'm sure you have actually. It was a video of a group of people from Sudan meeting the Pope, and it wasn't very well publicized in Britain, but last week the Pope met with the different factions that were fighting in Sudan. He called them together for a spiritual retreat. He didn't call them for negotiations, but for a spiritual retreat. And I don't know at what point within the retreat this particular meeting happened, but they show him with his interpreter, and the people from Sudan were there in front of them, both others in the room, and he says to them, "I plead with you that there should be peace in your country because humanity is suffering and we have to do something about that." So when he's speaking, he's the translator's translating into English, he's speaking in Italian, but even that was very, very humbling and moving to know how he was speaking. But then he went up to them and he kissed the feet of each one of them, three men and a woman. And he's old, he's, I don't know his exact age, but certainly 75 or so. And so when he sat down to kiss their feet, he couldn't get up again. And so they had to help him, support him. But he continued this with each one of the four. And it reminded me again of how when there is greatness within a human being, the expression of that greatness is not power and ego, but the expression of that greatness is humility. Now imagine if we could bring that into each one of our relationships. When I have greatness because not of anything external, nothing to do with position or possessions or anything like that, but the greatness of connecting with the goodness that lies within the human spirit. And in that connection with that greatness, then yes, we're going to be able to express that with dignity, but showing respect to each one in a very humble way, respecting the dignity of the other. And so I think it's the most important lesson that we have to learn. Connecting with others comes second, but connecting with the self comes first. And then the connecting with others is blessed with that humility. I know that you have to leave, and so we excuse you, and no problem, but thank you for coming. Thank you for joining us. All good wishes. The other thing that, again, is a little bit different to what most people would say in terms of relationships, I would say that the experience of the presence of the divine, when I connect with another human being, makes a huge amount of difference. Connecting with myself, and yes, I want to connect with each one that I'm in contact with, but if I allow the divine to be present with me, then there's a very different energy in our communication. And then there's the awareness of communicating with you as the divine being that you are, connecting with you in the presence of God, and through that, being able to experience an exchange which is based on truth and goodness. Sometimes we talk about being honest in relationships, but sometimes I see that I say I'm being honest, but I'm actually being critical. Have you noticed that? We talk about honesty, but I really just want to get it out of my head. And what I'm saying is my version, my understanding of the reality, which may or may not be the truth, but I want to say it, I want to express it. And then I say, well, I'm only being honest. Well, I have to check myself and see, am I first of all detached? And detachment doesn't mean rejection and coldness. Detachment means non-possessiveness. A different interpretation of detachment, but I think it's a more accurate way to see detachment. Detachment has bad press. People don't like that word. But it is actually telling me that, can I be impartial? Can I be non-attached to a particular point of view or perception or opinion? And so in that state of non-attachment and non-possessiveness, in that state of being impartial, then in that impartiality, I'll be able to understand truth more clearly and definitely. I won't be passing judgment, because sometimes when I say, well, I'm only being honest, I'm actually not. What I'm doing is passing judgment. But no, that state in which I'm aware of my own inner being, connected with my own being, and seeing you, not just the external identity, but you as that living being, that living spirit. And in that state of being impartial, then what I say can be the truth, but it won't be critical, it won't be harsh, it won't be judgmental. Whereas if I'm not detached, then yes, it can be highly coloured with any of those different influences. And so the spiritual journey is a journey in which definitely we move towards harmony, and again, starting inside. To what extent do I experience harmony within? Harmony between my feelings and my conscience, harmony between my thoughts and stillness, so that when I choose, my thoughts can become calm and quiet. I take charge of what's going on inside of me. And so there isn't a struggle going on inside continually. Externally, things may be difficult, but I need to find equilibrium and stability within, because in that state of equilibrium, then yes, what I say and what I do is going to be in the right direction and is going to be creating harmony. But if I myself am not in a state of harmony and balance inside, is there any possibility of harmony externally? Seems difficult, isn't it? You can see how we've lost touch with ourselves and we've forgotten our own inner identity. And as a result of that, then relationships have become very fragile. How many friends do you have on Facebook? And if you actually need a friend to talk to, out of those few hundred, how many would be available for you to talk to them? So, relationships and the fragility of relationships, that's one aspect. In California, relationships last close, partner relationships last maybe about 6 months on average. And in Britain, maybe a bit longer. But yet here in Britain, I'm told that we have more people in their second marriage than their first marriage, and we have more single parent families in London than we do normal families. So again, a mirror of the state of relationships today. And the basic factor, no contact with the self, and certainly very little awareness. Even if people go to temples and churches and mosques, even if they do all of that, but when it comes to interaction between people, is there that awareness of the divinity of the other and the ability to bring the presence of the divine in between? And so going on that inner journey is definitely the first step towards harmony in relationships out here. And so the more I value myself and respect myself, I approach another with that vision of goodness and dignity. Would we have quarrels and conflict if we recognized the dignity of every human being? There's a statement that I heard many, many years ago, and it stayed with me very strongly, and it goes something like this: it's better to lose an argument and win a friend than to win an argument and lose a friend. And so when I begin to come into a state of conflict with another, before it becomes conflict, am I able to recognize the signs and step back with humility, with dignity, and say, yes, it's fine to the other? There's an interesting interpretation of this word, harmony. And many of you perhaps know the Hindi language, but I'll translate it anyway. Har mani. It means accept defeat. Don't prove yourself right. Don't prove that you know better. Don't try to win the argument, but accept defeat. And it goes on further, Har mani jhagda tuta. Accept defeat and the argument ends. It takes a lot of dignity to be able to do that. It's not a sign of weakness, it's a sign of inner strength and courage and faith to be able to do that. But these are things that we don't always remember, and in the heat of the moment there are reactions that happen. In English they say, count 10. Do you count 10 before you hear a response? Somebody's needling you, and you know that that's what they want. They want a reaction from you. And you comply. You give them what they want. You react. How do you feel afterwards? Does it make you feel better? Probably not. Probably it'll keep you awake at night, and it'll be emerging in your mind, and you'll be tossing and turning, and that scene won't go away. But even if I count up to 5, not even 10, just 5, but just take that pause, those few moments before a reaction, and you'll see things differently. What we think and say in the heat of the moment, or nowadays it's even worse, you read an email and the blood rises to your head and you instantly knock off something and you press the button and it's gone. And even just a few minutes later, begin to think, could I have done something different? could my response have been something else? And you're already beginning to mull it over and look at it differently. But of course the response is gone. And so then the response comes back. And if you're sensible, you won't reply again until you've given it proper attention and thought. And maybe the best thing to do would be to lift the phone and make personal contact at that moment rather than just rely on emails going back and forth. In Hindi they say, Mukh mein molra dalo, put a bead in your mouth, which is basically saying the same thing. Be quiet, be still. And if you're quiet and still, things will look very different and your response will be very different. If you needle me and I react, it sets off the pattern that's already existing. You know me, and so you know what's going to make the buzz, and I react in the way that you had anticipated. So there's already a pattern that you've noticed and seen, but that pattern gets underlined and that pattern continues to get worse and worse, and so the fuse becomes shorter and shorter. It took a longer time to react before and now it takes a shorter time to react. So at some point, if I begin to feel the pain and the suffering of all of this, I ask myself the question, do I want to continue like this? And a voice inside says, I don't like it like this. It's not comfortable, either for me or the other. And I want something to shift. Can I expect them to shift? Have you tried making someone else change? Have you tried? Maybe you have. But I can bet they haven't changed because you wanted them to change. But there is something I can do. I can make a shift myself. I can change. I can't make them change, but I can make myself change. And again, I would bring in the connection with the one above. Because whatever habit it is you have, you may have tried to change it yourself. And maybe you manage it for a short time, or a little bit of a longer time. But it's not a permanent change. And even habits that we have, eating habits, drinking habits, whatever, external things, really external things, even to change those habits takes a lot of will power, inner power, inner strength. And certainly to make changes within our characteristics, not just external habits, but our inner characteristics. That takes not just understanding, but it takes power from up above. And so yoga, the connection with the one, gives me that power with which I can make the changes inside myself. And so there, I don't stop even to count one, never mind 10 or 5, now that power reminds me, stop. Before I send off that instant reply, again, the power is there to be able to control my habit. And so bringing God into the picture in the things that we're doing in our daily life is very much the benefit that Raj Yoga brings. And so when I practice Raj Yoga meditation, then I'm asked to do something that's sounding very simple, and it is simple, but the effects are huge. Just take a pause through the day, several times a day. Now, whenever it is that's convenient. Maybe if you're a student, between lessons, that's a convenient time. One lesson has ended, the next lesson's about to begin, and so you have those few moments. If you're a teacher, the same. You have those moments between one lesson and the other lesson. And in those few moments, you connect with yourself and you connect with the one above. Whatever your job may be, one customer, a client, a patient, they leave, another one comes, you've got those few moments. And it takes just a moment to go inside, connect with myself, connect with the one above, draw that power and remind myself again of the goodness and the truth. And the interaction you have with the next patient, client, customer, whatever, but the next interaction you have will be filled with a different quality. You won't be going backwards in terms of your reactions and your habits, but you'll be learning and moving forwards with each one. And at the end of the day, if this is what you've been doing, just taking that moment of pause, you find you're not so tired as you used to be, because the battery's been topped up through the day. It's not that the battery has been used and so that the energy level is down, but you've kept topping it up through the day, even just through that moment. And so it makes a huge difference. It also means that at the end of the day, when you start checking yourself and you ask the question, what did I learn today? Did I learn something today? Hopefully I did. What did I learn today? And another question to ask the self, what could I have done differently? Is there something I could have done differently? Well, that would have been, again, a way to look at things differently and know how to bring about transformation and change for the better. And so if this is a sort of practice that I have, you can see that I'm learning about creating harmony inside myself. I'm also learning about creating harmony with others around me, whichever level of relationship it may be. What is it that people want from you? I don't think they want a lot. I think that maybe what they want from you is just a smile, just an acknowledgement, maybe a kind word, maybe a word of encouragement. I don't think people demand a lot. Generally, there are some people very demanding, but generally speaking, it's not a lot that people ask for. But I need to be full, and if I am full, then I can fulfill their need also. And if I'm empty inside, what am I going to do? I'm going to be taking energy from others. And they're going to start avoiding me. It's a reality. If people feel that after spending half an hour in my company, they feel drained, next time they're going to think twice about spending 10 minutes with me, never mind half an hour with me. And if after spending a little bit of time with me, they feel lighter, they feel uplifted, then they're going to want that company more and more. And so what is it that I'm offering? Am I offering something that is valuable for them? And I can only do that if my own battery is really charged. And the time for charging your battery is the early morning. While the rest of the world is quiet, that's the time when I can recharge my own inner battery. And if my battery is charged, then I don't need to be taking from anyone else at all. And so think about the difference in the relationship when I enter a relationship with a need and I'm wanting to take, or I enter into a relationship when I'm full and I'm ready to give something. Different formula, isn't it? And so which is the formula that's going to work? A needy me, and that relationship is going to be not very long lasting. But of course the other side is that the other person's also needy. The two needy people come together and what happens? They're both trying to take and neither is able to give, and snap. It's not going to work out very well at all. That's another reason why today relationships are so fragile, because each one comes into it with a very great need. We've lost our inner power, our inner capacity, and so the neediness is a reality today. And if there's one particular quality that I need to have to maintain good relationships, again, it's a word that's not very popular, and that is tolerance. I was very interested that a few weeks ago I was in the Middle East, and they told me that the Emirates, seven Emirates, different states within the Emirates, and the Emirates are honoring this year as a year of tolerance. It was interesting. And of course they were looking at it in terms of harmony amongst the different races, because if you've been to Dubai or Abu Dhabi or around there, then you know there's many, many different nationalities all living together, and most times in a very small space. So harmony amongst relationships on that level is vital there. But this word tolerance, it's not something that we usually appreciate, and we usually associate tolerance with pain. You know, I've got this pain in my knee, I've got this pain in my tooth, I'm going to have to tolerate it until it gets seen to, until it gets sorted out. And you sort of grit your teeth and get on with it and learn to live with it or manage it in some way or another. But tolerance in relationships isn't about gritting your teeth. That's not what it's about. Tolerance in relationships means, put it differently, here's another word, acceptance. Accepting the other as they are, who they are, what they are, without imposing my will on how they should be or how they ought to be. Can I do that? Can I accept them as they are, instead of imposing or wishing them to change or having them adjust to me? So tolerance in that way. But it takes a lot of spiritual power on my part to be able to have a heart that's big enough and generous enough to have that sort of acceptance. And then yes, tolerance isn't a struggle, then it's not gritting your teeth, but it's a very happy acceptance. But you can see how lack of tolerance today in big things like acceptance of many colors of the rainbow, and a gathering such as this, which has many different varieties present, whether it's color, whether it's race, whether it's religion, whether it's ages, whether it's cultures, but being able to have harmony amongst all to sit together quietly, accepting each other as part of one family. Well, that's the beautiful aspect of tolerance. But also tolerance in simple things, like the person you're living with and they have this very irritating habit of leaving their dirty teacup in the sink. And okay, so you go wash it up, you wash it up again, and you wash again, and they don't seem to learn. So then you think, well, I should tell them. And so you tell them, but they're still not listening. You can see how the level of tolerance gets reduced. And at some point of time, there's going to be an explosion. Well, can I accept it? And I don't have to. I have many choices. I can talk about it. And instead of washing up, I can just let it all accumulate and then see what happens. Maybe they'll invest in a dishwasher. Maybe that's the answer. But you can see how a tolerance capacity in little things has really, really reduced. Where some years ago, say, okay, never mind, carry on. But today, it becomes unacceptable. It becomes too much. And it's become too much for me because I don't have that generosity of spirit. I don't have that big heart in which I'll say, it's okay. I'm not talking about washing dirty cups till the end of your life. But just one simple example of how things that could be resolved mutually, easily, become a big story that creates many conflicts inside. And so to be able to develop my own inner capacity, and as I do that, then to be able to manage myself, why should it be that somebody else's habits are disturbing my inner peace? So their habit is more powerful than my peace. Can I go the other way? Can I make my own inner state of peace more powerful so that their habit doesn't disturb me? Yes, I can do that. And there's a way to be able to do it, to connect and draw that power, so that that which is insignificant really becomes that and doesn't become a big mountain. There was a question that Daddy Janki, many of you know her, she asked us a question at one point, and she said, how does a tiny mustard seed become like a mountain? And her answer was, by overthinking. You think about something, you think about something, you think about it, and have you seen mustard seeds? They're really, really tiny, difficult to measure. So that little tiny seed becomes a mountain in my head, simply because I've thought about it so much, so much, so much. And so then her next question was, well, how can a mountain be made into a mustard seed? By not thinking about it. Because if overthinking has made it into a mountain, so here's something that at this moment seems to be like a mountain, insurmountable. But can I stop thinking about it in the way that I have been? And just take a pause. Just take some time out and not think about it. Would it reduce? And would I be able to see it differently? Who thinks you can reduce a mountain and turn it into a seed. 1, 2, 5. Slowly, slowly. It's a fact. Just give yourself that space. And then look at it again. And it'll be quite different. You'll be able to see it very differently. And so the trick is, what's going on in here, not what's going on out there, but seeing what's going on in here is going to make me look at things in a very different way. And so developing my own tolerance capacity. Another way, one way is to look at somebody, and it seems to be a habit we've developed over the last several years. I won't say recently, but it's been human nature, but it's gradually been getting stronger and stronger. Instead of seeing goodness, we see fault. Is that right? A person may have a dozen good qualities, and if I love that person, I'm going to be talking about those good qualities, noticing those good qualities, bringing it to the attention of others. And maybe they've got a few faults also, because nobody is perfect, that's for sure. So there must be something that's not quite so good. But I'll talk about their good things, I won't mention the others, even though I know them, I recognize them. And the other way around, here's somebody that I don't get on well with, and instead of noticing the 10 good qualities, I notice the couple of weaknesses, the faults. And what do I talk about? You know the answer. I'm going to be talking about the faults. I'm not going to be mentioning the others. So, same person, and there's 10 good and 2 not so good, but somebody will talk about the 10 and another will talk about the 2. And more generally, we tend to notice weakness and fault rather than the goodness. Is it possible for me to switch that around and underline for myself the reality? In fact, I should say the truth. Reality is the things of this dimension. The truth is the higher dimension. And so in that higher dimension, am I able to see the goodness of every human being and the specialities of every human being? It's the truth. And yes, there's the other side. There are those faults. But the more I see them, the more those negative things impact my awareness and begin to influence me. And the other, the more I see the goodness, the more I am influenced by that goodness, and to benefit for me, not just benefit for the other individual, that you're able to see them with respect and love, but benefit for me, because I am influenced by those also. Whichever way it is I'm thinking and feeling, that's the influence on a soul. So I'm thinking about their goodness, I'm feeling the goodness, and that's the influence. And the other way, also true. And so maybe a little shift that we need to make within ourselves. What do I see? And how do I see it? And what do I do about it? So, several very practical things for all of you to experiment with. But the most important thing, the relationship with yourself. The second, bring God's presence into the interaction, the relationship. The third, develop tolerance. The fourth, see see the goodness and feel the goodness of each one. Sometimes we talk about past karma impacting the quality of relationship. That's true. It's absolutely a fact that there are things that have happened in the past that I don't remember, I don't recall, but they've happened, and so you start off on the wrong foot with an individual and it doesn't get any better. So how do I deal with that? If there's something on this side of the scale which is negative, and if on the other side of the scale there's nothing, then the negative is the sum total. But if on the other side of the scale I continue to add the positive, then that's going to outweigh the negative. So whatever my past karma with an individual may have been, I don't know, there's something there. But today, if I very consciously see the goodness and my behavior towards them is with that respect and regard, then that's going to outweigh whatever was the karma from the past, and it's going to cancel it. And so what must I do today? See the goodness and do that which is right, to be able to share the vision of brotherhood, to be able to share the vision of that dignity and respect for that eternal being, the divine being present in each one. Let me stop here and see if there are any questions or comments that you may have. And I'm sure there's a mic that's going to come to you. We have a few minutes for questions or comments. Mic is coming, it's walking.
How do you deal with rejection in relationships? You want the relationship, you know, it's family, and yet they're rejecting you, they're shutting you out, they're harsh in their interaction with you. So how do you deal with that rejection?
The only way I know of is on a subtle level, because any approach that you're making on an external level isn't working, and so then you start using the subtle level, which is actually more powerful, which means that you're not holding it against them and you're actively sending them good vibrations. And I don't mean sit thinking about them all day and send them good vibrations, but maybe just at the end of a meditation, just for a few moments, literally just a few moments, bring them into your awareness and send them God's light and love. And whatever are the barriers, they'll be removed. And I can't put a time span on it. It won't happen in a day, probably, it may take longer, but it'll happen. And you'll begin to get signs of that. They'll start melting. Usha?
Om Shanti. I've heard that in the school there's a lot of improvement happening to settle children, and yoga has been, people have been signing a petition to introduce yoga as a inclusive into the curriculum. I was a bit disappointed to hear that it's been rejected and it's now left as an optional choice for the teachers to apply it. And I'm thinking, when the public health and educational policies are setting high expectation on mental health, on one hand and then they are rejecting the petition. I feel it's contradictory. Any comment on that?
I don't get into politics, but find a politician who's going to help support you in that, because that's what's happening, that politicians seem to have the ultimate say in everything. And so if it becomes a decision by lawmakers that this is something that should happen, because I know that a couple of years ago, maybe 3 years ago, maybe four, Lord Andrew Stone had requested mindfulness to be taught to both Houses of Parliament and also all the staff there. And a couple of hundred people went through an 8-week course on mindfulness. And after that they wrote a paper in which, a white paper that was published, and said that mindfulness and related topics should be taught in schools and colleges, should be taught within the prison system, should be taught within the NHS system. So that was something that was actually initiated a few years ago. And it sort of got lost along the way, because maybe Brexit is one of the distractions. You want to say something else? One second.
We don't give up and put it across as harmony and the lesson of harmony relationship education in school could work.
Again, the same person, Lord Andrew Stone. There was a debate in the House of Lords last year, and he spoke about one of four different organizations that he knew who were focused on teaching values, and he mentioned Brahma Kumaris as one of them. Well, he mentioned Daddy Janki, actually, at the head of the Brahma Kumaris, and he's known Daddy for about 20 years. So he stated that in the House of Lords, and it was published in Hansard, the official record of what happens in Parliament. And he stated that when values are taught in schools, then this definitely creates a foundation for better adults and citizens. So it's recognized, but on the other side we would say that this is Kali Yuga, the dark age, and so it's time for the sun to rise. The dawn has broken, and I believe that the day is not far off. So it's happening. It'll happen. If there's no questions or comments, then there's another thing that I would like us to do. Nope. Okay. Let's have some meditation. And you heard Natalie at the start of the event, and so a little bit similar. Just let yourself sit comfortably. And I'll speak out my own thoughts as I meditate and invite you to follow these ideas. Going deep inside, I connect with myself. The inner being, the spiritual being, the being that I am, the soul. I, the spiritual being, am a being of light, a being of peace. And in this awareness, I connect with the divine. Supreme. The source of light, of love, of peace, and as I do this from the source, the light and the love restore balance within the soul so that there is harmony within. And the power of God's love fills the soul with contentment, so that I am full. This is what I had wanted, and so naturally and so easily this has happened. I am filled with God's love. And in this contentment and joy, I can send out vibrations of peace and love to all those who I know. God's light and love reaches not only me, but God's light and love reaches all those connected with me. And light and love reaches further. Reaches out to the whole world. So that all souls may benefit and absorb this light and love. And as this continues, the darkness of the world recedes and the light enters. The dawn has broken and the day has begun. And God's light and love envelops the whole world. And the world is filled with harmony. I hold this vision. I come back to the awareness of the moment here and now, but now I keep this awareness of who I am and the one above and the vision of each one as that shining star of light. Om Shanti. Thank you for your attention, and I'm going to excuse myself and take your leave because I return to London now.
Thank you, Sister Genty. We do know that you have a long journey back due to the bank holiday traffic. But I just wanted to say that you're right, harmony starts within. And if we start on ourselves, look for the goodness in others, we reduce that fear that gets in the way of maintaining such good relationships. Thank you.